Thank you for inviting me to give this talk. As she mentioned, I'm from Washington State University. I'm the winter wheat breeder up there, and we've been playing around with using sensors for phenotyping for about 5 or 6 years now. And you'll see up here a lot of different co-PIs on this grant that we've been working on through the USDA to look more at phenotyping into our breeding programs. And so I'm going to be presenting a lot of data today, not just from my own wheat breeding program, but from a lot of my collaborators' programs as well. And when I put this together, I thought I would just kind of give you a snapshot, kind of take that 30,000 view of the different applications that we've been using high-throughput phenotyping in. And hopefully kind of give you a sense of what the technology can do, maybe let you sit there and think about it, how you could apply this into your own program. So a lot of these are at different levels. Some we're just barely starting on asking the questions. Some we've got pretty advanced where we're actually using them for selection in the breeding program. So just kind of give you that background sense of what this is going to be. It's really going to be just a high level view of a lot of different applications that we're testing out here. So the first thing is, what is high throughput phenotyping? And you hear this a lot, and then when you look at this, what does this mean? Is this, you know, a push cart through the field with a few sensors on it? Is this a tractor that you drive through the field? We've got UAVs there. You'll see an army of graduate students walking through the field. You know, are you talking about looking at single plants? Are you looking at this on a field level with looking at every plot? You know, high throughput, I guess, is kind of one of those relative terms. So when you're looking at something like photosynthesis, so we've got an image, let's see if this works, an image right here of some photosynthetic parameters on some single plants. It's high throughput in the sense that it's faster than what they used to do, but high throughput in the sense for a breeder, not necessarily. So it still takes a lot of time to collect some of this data going through. So it's one of those things when I hear high throughput, like I say, it's not necessarily always that it's faster or as fast as I would like it, I guess, but a lot of times it can give me information that I didn't have previously. And so there's kind of a trade-off there sometimes. It may take a couple hours to collect some of this data, but when it's data that I've never been able to have before or collect before, then I still see it valuable to the program. And then, as was mentioned previously as well, sometimes it can take me the same amount of time with a sensor as it can with me just visually rating it, but I'm feeling I'm getting a lot better data with the images or the sensors. You know, again, it's taking out any of the bias that I might have, and so it's a benefit to the program as well as we move through with this. So when I was looking at this and just some different applications of phenotyping, you know, I know there's probably a diverse group of members in the audience with different backgrounds. So, you know, this can be used to just do straight characterization. You know, if you're working with core collections or diversity panels, if you're a germplasm curator and you just want to collect more information on that germplasm that you have, just being able to characterize it is very beneficial. Then you have the plant breeding and selection groups, where we actually want to use this to identify superior plants, select them, and move them forward. And then also, kind of on a physiology standpoint, you can better understand plant responses to different stresses and actually start looking at what the plant's doing, how fast are stomates closing when a certain stress comes in, how are they using water, using different nutrients. So there's a lot of different applications, I think, that can go into looking at phenotyping. So just getting into this a little bit, like I said, I'm just going to go through some different applications that we've used this for. Cold tolerance is one of those. A lot of our crops are planted in the fall and need to survive through the winter time. You could also look at this and maybe in a spring crop if there's early freezes or early frosts in your environments. So here's just two little examples that we have on this. So the image over here are individual rows. When we were just going out and characterizing, I think there's about 1,500 lines here from a core collection. So we just wanted to go out and characterize the plants if they had cold damage or not. And so we were able to, You know, again, I could easily walk through there and rate this, but inevitably, as I get to that 1,500th plot, what I call 50% then may not be what was 50% when I started there. So being able to use an image to help us understand that's better as well. Here's a image of a plot that went through, or a big field that went through a cold event as well that killed some of the plants. So this is actually an NDVI image, and the more red the plants or the plots are, the more plants that are there. So these plants back here survived very well, and then these plots up here didn't make it through the winter. And you can also see little markers that we have down on the ground, which are very helpful in helping you figure out where you're at in the process of taking these aerial images, because you know, when you're looking at a couple thousand plots, it's easy to get lost out there. So we also looked at this. You know, it's a similar image in Washington. This is somewhat unique to us. Our winter wheat can be planted up to 8 inches, or you know, about 20 centimeters deep. And so, looking at emergence and this coming out has been very, very important trait for us to select on. You can see the ground image here of what this looks like. Some of our genotypes emerge very well, and others are not able to emerge from that. And then you can see the big aerial image there as well. So again, being able to take this, this is just a straight RGB image, but being able to take this and rapidly, you know, it takes about 15 minutes to collect this image. And then again, you know, that's the easy part, is collecting the image sometime, and then having to go back and dissect this image. So, you know, you have to go back, cut out your little plot here and get your estimate of your plot here. And so right here with the RGB image, we were just looking at green pixels and using green pixels just to estimate whether or how many plants were there, estimate emergence from the field. So, you know, when we did this and looked at it for how well I worked versus how well the algorithm worked, we had about an 80-85% calibration or correlation. And so the engineer that I was working with said, 85%, I don't know about that. I better go back and, you know, improve my camera system, improve something like that. And I said, it's probably me that you need to improve. I think that, you know, as was mentioned before, the image was doing a great job of being able to pick out all the green pixels. It was probably me that was estimating percent emergence off a little bit. So I think the sensors and the algorithms are working very well to get us the information that we want. This is an image of aluminum tolerance, looking very, very early in the process. And I used to make the joke and say, you know, looking at these plants, they just don't know they're dead yet. That as we go through time, you know, they look nice and healthy here, but over time, eventually they're going to die. But then I got to thinking about this, and I said, you know what, I wonder if they really don't know if they're dead yet, or if they do. Can we use sensors early on to start identifying some of these infections or the response these plants are giving to stress at a very early stage? And maybe I can tell with a sensor right now which of these plants are going to die and not have to wait, you know, 2 or 3 months before I can get that final information. And, you know, we've done this a lot on not just some of the abiotic stresses, but also looking at some of the diseases that will infect our plants as they come out of the winter and into springtime. A lot of time you'll get freeze-thaw cycles, which break up the roots, and then pathogens are able to infect those roots. And as time goes on, eventually, you know, when we get up to flowering or heading or grain fill, we start seeing the response visually of those diseases. And so the question on this one was, can we actually go earlier and start looking at these plants at a very young age and start identifying whether they've got these diseases, whether these plants are responding to that infection before we can actually visually see these. So this is a little bit of research that we're still playing around with. We're still trying to figure out if it's going to tell us what we want to. But I think it's very useful information, right? If I can get data back 2 or 3 months earlier as a plant breeder to make selections, It's beneficial to me whether I go in and I can remove those genotypes from further evaluation, whether I can do selective harvesting and not have to harvest everything. I think that can be a beneficial process for me. This is one, again, a somewhat uncommon disease called snow mold. And some of you, if you come from areas of high snow, you may have seen this in your lawn as you've shoveled your driveway and piled it onto your lawn. And then as that melts, you'll see kind of that white fungal growth under there. And eventually your lawn recovers. So it's the same with winter wheat. So here's a plot here up in northern Washington that had about 130 days of snow cover on it. And you can see here, it's a variety trial, so some varieties survive very well, others get this matted fungal growth on it. And eventually most of these will recover and regrow. So we typically will take two data points on there. I'll go out as soon as I can walk in the field and take an estimate of actually how much disease was there, how much infection, and then I'll come back maybe a month later and look at regrowth and see how much those plants were able to regrow. And so when I did that, so these are some rows again. We put out a couple thousand rows just for screening and evaluation. And some of these are even early generation where we're making selections on those. And so we've got our variety here that I would call my check. And as I was walking through, I got to this line, and let's say 10 is my highest rating, you know, the best plant out there. So I got there to that check variety. It was blind, so I didn't know it, but I rated that a 10. It looked really good. And then I kept walking along, and I got to this plant back here about an hour later, and it was definitely better than that one that I had already given my highest rating to. And so what do? Do I go back to the beginning and recalibrate myself and take the data again? Or do I give that one a 10 also, and then 3 months later when I'm looking at the data again, they're both 10s, they're both the same, right? I have no way of actually knowing that that line was actually better. So what we started doing is, you know, this is just with a GoPro camera. We just got it out there, and we just go over all the lines with the GoPro camera. So it does two things for us. One, it actually gives us a physical image. So anytime I can go back and I can actually look, this one got rated as a 10. What did that actually look like in the field, and help me remember that? Then also we're able to go in and just with some simple programming and computer systems, we're able just to take RGB pixels, and we can, again, I set my check at 100%, and then I can kind of estimate, you know, comparing the two in just a simple ratio. This one was 30% growth of the check, 75% growth of the check, 120% growth of the check. So again, it gives me a little bit of that idea of which plants are actually doing better, which plants aren't doing as well. Looking at a percentage of a certain variety rather than just an overall score. So I think it's been able to help us better understand, you know, the growth of these lines and make some better selections as well. So switching a little bit from wheat into camelina. So at Washington State University, they've started looking at camelina and breeding, kind of going into the biofuels and looking at that. So they've tried some different imaging for a lot of different parameters. One, looking at the seed and just seed size. So here's just seed on, and again, it's a simple process. They put it on a scanner. They're able to you know, just get a scanned image of these. They put it into false color, and again, they're just able to estimate black to white and start getting an estimate of how big the seeds are. You know, you can actually go in and measure the length of each of those seeds if you want, and actually get an individual seed or just kind of a bulk estimate of that. They're also starting to look at this for oil composition. You know, again, instead of doing the standard lab procedure of looking at oil composition, they're starting to ask the question, are there different sensors, NIR, something that can help us better understand the oil composition in here, in these plants. They're also looking at stand establishment. If you're not familiar with camelina, it's a very small seed. And this is typically following a spring wheat or winter wheat crop. And so going in with a lot of residue on the ground, stand establishment is very important for them. Early growth is very important for them. They kind of want that plant to get established and start growing very fast. So being able to use some of these images to get an estimate of that. You know, there was the question previously about that the color standard. So this is our color standard right down here as well. So, you know, it's just part of our process. So every image we're taking, we've got the color standard there to make the reference back to. And then we're also looking at flowering time, seeing if they can estimate flowering time from this. And this also might get, there's the question about heterogeneity within a plot as well. I think you're able to extract that from this as well. So if you got a little bit of heterogeneity in your plot, some plants are flowering, some plants aren't, you could actually go in and pick that out from some of these images, whether all the plants are flowering at the same time or you have a little bit of that heterogeneity in there. So our quinoa program was also looking at this, so they brought in, again, a diversity panel, and in this one in particular, they were looking at heat tolerance. And so again, you know, this is kind of some research that they're starting out with, using a lot of handheld sensors, thermal cameras here. This is a little sensor that helps estimate photosynthesis that you clamp on the leaf, a multispectral camera looking at about 16 different spectral bands. Again, trying to get an estimate of heat tolerance. And so this is one of those things where it's a little bit of labor intensive and maybe not as high throughput as we could do, but it's information that we have never been able to get before. So, you know, I visually can't look at a plot and say how well is that plant photosynthesizing or what's the temperature of that plant. Right, and so a lot of these sensors are able to do that for us and help us understand a little better about the physiological response that these plants are having. And so when I think about it kind of for my own application in plant breeding, you know, at the end of the day when I'm doing plant breeding, I weigh the bag, right? And the bag that's the heaviest is the plant that stays. What I don't know is how that genotype was able to get to that high yield potential. I know there's various ways it can get there, but just by taking a yield measurement, I don't know. And so we've now been able to start dissecting that a little bit. So I've got 15 high yielding genotypes. I can actually start asking the question, why are these genotypes high yielding? And if we can get that through different sensors and using selection, then I can start crossing lines together and maybe start pyramiding. You know, this line uses water, very efficient, and this line has a high photosynthetic capacity. Can we get those together and now start developing and selecting lines that are combining these different physiological processes into the same genotype and potentially start either looking for lines that have higher yield gains or lines that may potentially now be more stable across multiple locations, multiple year-to-year environments. You know, whatever it might be. So I get really excited when I can think now, okay, now I can start actually understanding what's underlying that yield potential that I'm selecting for. Jumping back to wheat a little bit. So this is looking at some early spring growth and canopy closure. So we just wanted to know, you know, as our plants are coming out of winter, you know, they're dormant and they start growing, or even if you're thinking about a spring plant that's planted in the spring, how fast are those plants actually getting to canopy closure, being competitive? And so these are just, again, some simple RGB images, some NDVI images, and this is actually just, it's the same little point and shoot digital camera for about $100. You can have different filters put on them. So this is just an NDVI filter that you send back to a company. They'll put an NDVI filter on. So it's just a nice little point-and-click camera that we're able to take these images. And then we use this program, Canopio, which is from Oklahoma State University. So again, it's a program that's available out there that will run your images. This is what it looks like after they get processed. So really, it's just kind of giving you these false color contrasts to estimate. So again, you know, we're kind of estimating here canopy closure, rate of biomass accumulation, I guess you could say. You know, there are some pitfalls to this. About the highest we could ever get is about 85%. So the program doesn't work well with shading. So these areas here, It's not necessarily that there aren't plants there, but that was areas, you know, if we look back at this previous one, you can see they're just kind of, get my pointer back up there, they're just shaded a little bit there. So, you know, it's not a perfect system, but it gives us a good idea, again, about how these plants are responding, how they're growing, and you just kind of have to play around with the data and kind of extract that important information. The other thing that this has really allowed us to do is see how these plants grow over time. So you'll see a genotype here that, you know, from our first rating, this is percent canopy closure. We were able to get out in the field in March 8th, so that was our day zero. And so from the first to the second, we saw actually a lot of biomass accumulation, whereas a lot of the other lines were actually flat in these about 7 days from taking images. So that one kind of had a pretty uniform rate of growth. Other lines were a little slower in the springtime and then increased. You'll see some lines here that put on a lot of biomass towards the end of the season. So again, there's just a lot of information and a lot of questions that you can ask with this type of data. Looking at it in my breeding program, we're actually now using this. Like I said, we've been using and researching this for about five years now. So we're actually to the point now where we're actually using this to select for genotypes. So this was some data that my postdoc collected, looking at two different indices, normalized water index and NDVI against yield potential in one of our dry locations that gets about 150 to 170 millimeters of rain a year. So not a lot of rain that we're trying to select on. You can see that with the yield potentials that are pretty low. So, you know, he went through and he collected all the phenotypic or the sensor data and pretty much said, you know, if we're going to select on this, we're going to want a more negative NWI number, a more positive NDVI number that correlates very well with yield potential. And he made a list of, okay, here's the lines that we need to select. And I went through, right, I didn't trust the guy, right, sensors, who believes them? So I went through and I did it just the normal way. I looked at all my data, made all my selections, and then we came together at the end. I looked at what he had selected. I looked at what I had selected. Lo and behold, they were the same. Or not the same, but my lines were included in his data set. So I thought, okay, this is worth looking at. And so again, you know, not only giving us a sense of maybe plants that are getting to high yield in different ways, but also, can we take this now a step earlier? And if I'm looking at single plants or single rows and looking at selection there instead of in yield plots, can we now select on some of this sensor data to select high yielding lines earlier in the breeding program? And the last example here is with apples and fire blight. So again, a very laborious process to actually go out and estimate fire blight. They've got about 2,000 trees out there, multiple workers out there who are estimating fire blight over multiple days. So they wanted to ask that same question. Are we able to use different aerial images, which we have up at the top, handheld sensors? You know, is there a way that we're able to better characterize these plants rather than going out? And so this is a first year data, but I have no doubt that they're going to be able to figure out a method to better estimate fire blight and disease in these plants. So now to the limitations, right? I said, yay, this is all great, and I love it. But I think the biggest thing is images are very easy to collect, and it's hard to process them. And I think, as we heard our previous speaker talk about, that's, I think, really part of the limitation here. And so definitely, as she mentioned, collaboration. You know, go find yourself a good computer scientist, a good engineer, somebody who can help you really with this data processing part. You know, when I first walked into the computer scientist's office, he laughed at me and said, I'm a computer scientist, what am I doing with plants? I'm not going to do any of that. And then we got talking a little bit, and then he actually started, that is an actual interesting computer science program or machine learning program, you know, and they get interested in that. And I did make the mistake, though, of taking him out to the field one day, and not because he wasn't great out in the field, but he walked out there in his loafers and suit, And I thought, okay, I better talk to him. And he did get lost a few times walking around in the field. So I had to remind myself also, you know, I think that's part of the collaboration, right? We've got to remember that we're both from different backgrounds, and I had to step back a little bit and help him understand a little more. And at the same time, he's had to help me understand the computer science part of it. So it's been a little give and take. We also have a lot of year-to-year variation, genotype by environment interactions. As we've done some of this work, we've learned that even if I'm looking at like a soft white germplasm versus a hard red germplasm, the same different indices aren't useful in both germplasms. Or what's useful in the Midwest for hard red germplasm isn't useful in the Pacific Northwest for hard red germplasm. So really, you know, it's good to read and see what other people are doing, but if you want to use this, you're going to have to do a little truth testing in your own environment. Make sure you do that before you go full out. And then really understanding what the data from the sensor are telling you. You know, what can you get from that? And kind of my caveat to all this is, you know, before you jump in, all in, make sure you talk to a lot of people. If you're looking at different sensors, talk to somebody who's used these. Because a salesman will always nod his head and tell you, yeah, it can work. It can, you know, no problem. You know, we've got sensors out into the field that have overheated because we're using them in the field. We've purchased sensors, and then when we start talking to the engineers, they say, oh no, you'll never be able to use that on a grass. Broadleaf, okay, but never on a grass. And so, you know, there's a lot of limitations there to think about. But like I say, definitely there's a lot of useful information that you can garner. Like I say, whether you're looking at this from breeding, physiology, or just germplasm curation, you know, being able to provide more information, right? If we could put in there in some of these germplasm panels, you know, lines that have better photosynthetic efficiency or better water use, that's information that then the rest of this community and the scientists can go in and look at that and say, okay, we can use that and answer other research questions. So again, just at the end, acknowledgement, some of the other breeders that I showed data from, funding, a lot of this comes from a USDA grant, and also our grain commission and some of the other commodities. They have commissions that have put money into this. So again, you know, a lot of different sensors, a lot of different crops we can use this on. Hopefully you maybe sparked some ideas in your mind about how you could use this in your own programs as well. And with that, I will take any questions. Yeah.
Yeah, Eric. First, beautiful talk. Really like to see the exciting progress. Have you thought about changes in your experiment design, including microplots or increasing the number of locations, and just not harvesting them because you can get the data you need?
Right. So the question is about changing our experimental design or locations. I'm getting to that point now, right? Up to this point, it's just been, does it work? You know, can we actually use this? And so I think that's a good point. Now we're going in, you know, we're looking at plot designs where we have multiple checks so we can start accounting for variation across the field, variation across time if we need to. And then, yeah, you know, I can put these in now into small little plots or head rows at multiple locations, start accounting for that variation. Yeah, I know I'm not going to ever harvest those. Some of these locations will actually spray out once I've collected the data, so we don't need to manage them anymore, because right, I don't need grain from those. I just need the information. So yeah, you can start expanding that, right? As a breeder, I'd love to put yield plots everywhere, but I know I can't. And so yeah, it's a good point there of being able to change that.
Aaron, for your disease data, such as snow mold and wheat, do you also include a susceptible check? Because maybe 100 is not the same when your susceptible check is 40 versus when it's 10.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So the question was if we put in susceptible checks. Yes, we do. We always have susceptible checks. The other thing on something like snow mold is depending on the severity of the snow cover that year, we can have differences in the disease. So yeah, there's a lot of things to take into account for the different diseases you're working with. You know, in a sense, that's why I kind of like looking at these ratios as well, because I can always set that one variety that in my mind is acceptable for a grower? And then I can say, are we worse than or better than in any kind of disease pressure that we might have? But yeah, there's always a susceptible and, like I said, kind of my known good check in there.